ordinary. It sounds so uneventful, kind of unimportant, really. It means the regular course of things, nothing new or unexpected. Now, miracle, there's a word. The dictionary says it's an extraordinary event manifesting divine intervention in human affairs. It seems like an unusual coupling, putting these two words together today, ordinary and miracle. Easter's always been a time of hope, a time of renewal, perhaps miracles. The earth is beginning again after all the darkness and cold and snow and more snow. We're given proof in the evidence of longer days and warmer temperatures and budding plants that light and warmth will return again. It's ordinary. It happens every year. It's the regular course of events. And yet spring reminds us that we have a second chance, a time to start again, and we're always grateful to see it. Soon to come is summer, and summer brings to mind weddings. I'm excited to officiate at a few weddings this summer. And like the hope of spring, I'm always kind of surprised at how hopeful weddings are. If you've ever decided to commit your life to someone, you know how exciting it is to start this new life together, this adventure with someone you love and with someone who loves you just as well. And yet for most of us who have been in long-term relationships, we know that it isn't always easy. It doesn't always work out. In fact, 50% of marriages end in divorce. Yet this daunting statistic doesn't stop people from falling in love again. It doesn't stop them from taking a chance, from beginning again. For me, love is how the divine acts within our human lives. Whether a person is a friend or a family member or a lover, it's true to say that to explore for a lifetime a single human being is one of the greatest experiences in the world. It's a miracle. It's a miracle that couples continue to wake up day after day and look at one another and think, I'm glad that you're here. Let's get up and be together again today. It's a miracle that families get up and confront another day of activities and messy chaos and get up and do it all over again the next day. It's a miracle that at the end of a phone line or a computer screen is a friend who will listen, even when we're difficult to listen to. It happens every day. It happens every moment. I bet it might have happened this morning in your own house. What a miracle.
Yes, as Karen said, our ordinary miracles can be found every single day, often right inside our own homes. And just because these things are so commonplace, like, as she said, the words, I love you, that doesn't mean that they're any less marvelous or miraculous. We are wonderfully surrounded by ordinary miracles every single day if we just have the ears to hear and the eyes to see. But to select just one of those ordinary miracles was a bit of a challenge because there are so many of them. But the one that I focused on to celebrate today is the absolutely amazing, not necessarily infrequent, occurrence of those who are able to step out of the grip of active addictions in their lives. This is quite a profound miracle to me, and I bet nearly every one of us here has a family member, or perhaps is, such a miracle. These things are so tough, we know, when caught in the irrationality and the relentlessness of that compulsion, the disease of substance abuse, it can feel absolutely hopeless. For those who love someone who is entangled in addictions, it can feel devastatingly helpless. So many sleepless nights, so much chaos, so much worry, so many tears, so much heartache. Those who are touched by addictions know that they can rob relationships of the sensations of love and trust altogether. So knowing how extremely powerful they are, it's an amazing miracle to me that anyone gets clean and sober. And yet, it is an ordinary miracle that happens each and every day. Every single day, someone somewhere reclaims her or his life and says, enough. This drink or this drug has taken enough from me and those that I love, but no more. Enough. It's a miracle, plain and simple. No one seems to really know why it finally blossoms inside that person. Sometimes an intervention has happened. Sometimes there have been tears of a child begging. Sometimes some humiliating experience has occurred. Sometimes all of those have happened without result. And sometimes none of those things have happened, but the addict or the alcoholic just knows that it's time to be done. Somehow, something changed within them and they began to long for health and wholeness much more than they longed for the substance. They become willing to do anything to stay clean and sober. It is truly a miracle. And as I said, we don't know why. It's certainly not a measure of the family's love for that person or the fervency of their prayers. It seems impossible, and yet we are so deeply, deeply grateful that this miracle happens every single day, right before our eyes. And if you're still waiting for this particular miracle, don't give up. We hear the words redemption and rebirth a lot around this season. And people that are in recovery know very intimately the profound meaning of those words, redemption and rebirth. There are many, many miracle people right here in this fellowship, right here in this community. So if you're still hoping for your loved one or your own recovery miracle, don't give up. It might be just around the corner.
I believe that ordinary miracles happen even in the midst of life's greatest challenges and sorrows. And I had this belief tested and confirmed when my mom died on New Year's Day. Reeling in the days after she died, there were several ordinary miracles that helped keep me going, and I want to share one of the stories. A letter addressed to my mom arrived 3 or 4 days after she died. I opened the letter and noticed right away that the letterhead came from the local library where she and my dad lived. I glanced at the bottom, and it was from a man named Benjamin, and it looked like he was in the history and the special collections department of the library. He opened the letter by explaining that he had an interest in my mom's father, my grandfather. He explained that he had recently moved into a new home, and like any good history buff, had done some research on the home and its history, and had discovered that the home was once owned by my grandpa and grandma. He dug a little deeper into my grandfather's life and found that my grandfather had been a cartoonist for our local newspaper. And he found my grandpa's cartoonist perspective on our local community and how it fared through the Great Depression and World War II and the aftermath to be very, very interesting. And so he had decided to write an article about my grandfather for the local historical society. And so he tracked down my mom, the only child of my grandparents, in the hopes of talking with her and finding out a little more about my grandpa. He included with a letter a wonderful photograph of my grandpa at work, the obituary from when my grandfather died, and a few of his cartoons from the newspaper. I glanced at the date on the letter and realized that he had composed the letter on the last full day of my mom's life. When I called him, he shared that he had been very busy leading up to Christmas, getting ready for it with work and the holidays. And he finally had some time during Christmas vacation to write the letter. He mailed it 2 days after my mom died. He told me that he had kept a coworker apprised of his progress, his research, and his efforts to connect with my mom. When he told her he had mailed the letter, she said, "I'm so sorry, but I saw that lady's obituary in the paper today." So when I shared this news, it was not a surprise to Benjamin. Shortly after opening that letter, we found my mom's baby book. Her parents had chronicled her growing up years through the baby book with some dedication. And my mom had kind of a privacy streak to her and somehow had managed to keep this baby book secret from 5 snoopy kids for 50-plus years. Another miracle, I guess. So it was really quite a treasure to find. It included some amazing photos of my mom when she was little, including pictures with my mom and my dad. They had cottages adjoining each other, one arm in arm on my mom's second birthday. There were also some pictures of the house her family lived in when she was born. And this wasn't the same house that she occasionally drove us by saying, "There's where I grew up." We didn't know she had lived in another house for a couple years before moving to the house she had showed us, and my dad had forgotten that fact, too. And guess what? The house pictured in the baby book is the house that this guy, Benjamin, from the library, lives in now. So when I called him, I said, "I'm looking at this picture of a fireplace in the house with a big window next to it, Christmas tree next to the window. Describe the fireplace." And he said, "Yeah, I'm sitting in a rocking chair right in front of that fireplace right now." I have to tell you that my first response to all this was actually disappointment. My mom loved her dad very, very much and would have been absolutely thrilled with this unexpected interest in his life and work, surfacing nearly 40 years after he died. What a bummer. She just missed getting this letter by a couple days. But that feeling of disappointment quickly gave way to more of a feeling of joy. Learning more about my grandfather and my mom's childhood, knowing someone all these years later was interested in their story, these were wonderfully healing things in the aftermath of my mom's death. It made this very hard thing just a little bit easier. It was one of the quiet miracles that helped me keep going. It was like a surprising spring flower blooming in an unexpected place, like that flower blooming in the vacant lot in the children's story. And now, even months later, as I think about that letter and that encounter, it still makes me smile.